Play Misty for me. Yes, that's right. DJ Misty is back and she's coming to you live every Thursday night from 7 to 8 for The Scoop. So tune in and get all your entertainment news here on radio.dominican.edu.
Welcome back to another session of Sport City. I'm here with, as your host, Jay Smith, here with another session of Sport City. And we are coming at you with all angles of sports, especially Bay Area and Northern California sports today. We've got a lot of stuff on King's Corner to cover. Got some Giants news. Today was a big day for the Giants. And we've got a little bit of interesting SoCal basketball news. A couple of different interesting pieces of SoCal basketball news, so you're going to want to stay for that. I think you're going to want to go to the Facebook page, and that would be Facebook Sports City with Jay Smith. And I also have a blog up. It's called Sports City U Blog. You can go to blogspot.sportcityu.com, and that's where you want to go. I'm going to be keeping that up to date. And if you want to call in, I am very open to callers. The number is 415-482-3587. Now again, that's 415-482-3587. So, and I welcome calls. You know, I like input. I like the input of all of my sports fan friends, so call in. Let's see what you have to say. Now, we're going to be having a good show for you today, and when we come back, we're going to have a little bit of King's Corner. But first, I'd like to actually give a little shout-out to my boy Drew from back home. He has been coming up in the rap game, and he and his buddy actually have a little something going, and I'd like to play a little song for you guys.
I remember when I didn't have a friend, and my biggest problem was every day near then.
Thinking back to the days, I was a lone wolf. Way different from all the others, but I was bulletproof. Downplayed my lyricism, they didn't get the message. They ridiculed my ability, so that left me friendless. The laughter seemed so endless, but I was never worried. I kept on spitting that sick shit, and I had a virgin. And now you see me surging, cutting this game up. But they were singing a different song way back when I had just came up. Well, attempts to shackle me ended up in some casualties. They laughed at me back then, but now that's considered blasphemy. I speak it factually, changing this shit up drastically. Everything that I previously wanted to say was just kept under these raps, you see. The game's so musty, these rappers have made it disgusting. Committed a rape unjustly and call that shit Sandusky, huh? Leaving something like Paterno's legacy behind. I'll write the scriptures, man, I'm in my pen state of mind.
Come and go, to and fro, from day to day, from day to day. Yeah, come and go, and fro, from day to day, from day to day.
Yo, I remember when nobody ever listened. I tried to play my music, but nobody paid attention. Fast forward 1 year, everybody wants to hear the flow that made these other rappers fold like a lawn chair. And I ain't nowhere near done yet. The success is enough to make you shine after the sun sets. I'm talking where I need to be. Till then, I'm lower middle class, so I'm high on this greenery. Just peep the scenery, no car to get from A to B. So public transportation is the way for me, shit. Unless my nigga Allen swoops me. For now, I work a 9-to-5 to save up for a hoopty. Somebody shoot me, the stress is endless. Road to riches, and I'm speeding to the finish. Used to be the losers, now it's my team that's winning. But to be real, I wouldn't have it any different.
Everything come and go,
Hey, yo, it's funny how things change, huh, Jerron?
From day to day.
From now they finally listening.
Yeah, come and go.
All it took was a little patience, right?
To and fro.
Yeah.
From day to day.
All these problems.
From day to day.
They just come and go.
Yeah, come and go. To and fro.
Shout out Handbook.
From day to day.
All the way from Sacktown. UK, it's all love out here, baby.
Yeah, come and go. To and fro.
Smooth. Just in case you didn't know.
From day to day.
Yeah.
Yeah, come and go.
Now, you heard Drew say all the way back to Sacktown in that song, and that's where we're heading next, all the way to King's Corner. So, to start out King's Corner, we have a little bit of good news. The Sacramento Kings are staying in Sacramento. Now, I say that's good news. That's more like ecstatic news. I really have no other emotion for this news other than elation. I can't believe it. The Kings are staying, especially after last year. Nothing but pessimism in Sacramento. Nothing but pessimism. Everybody hated the Maloofs. Everybody just was so against everything that they were doing. We were mad. We were mad and angry and upset and disappointed that our Kings, were leaving. You know, it sucks because Sacramento, the capital of California, has only one professional sports team, and that's the Kings. So we like to hold on to those Kings. And back in 85, everybody was excited when they came. In 2011, everybody was really mad when they were going to leave, but then they didn't leave. And now we're staying for good. And first, I like to go over the boring stuff, actually, which, as boring as it may be, is very, very important to what the Kings are doing. Now, the Kings were going to stay only if they got an arena deal. If the city got an arena deal, then they were going to stay. Because Arco Arena, or now as now it's called Power Bounds Pavilion, but it'll always be called Arco Arena to all Kings fans, it's kind of a mess. It's just been there many times. It's not a good stadium. It doesn't seat very many people. It's falling apart. Not good at all. Now, for the money-wise, what we're paying for this arena, $256 million is going to be paid by the city in various reasons. That's a whole lot of stuff that I don't really want to go into because that's a whole lot of money and numbers. $73 million is going to be coughed up by the Maloofs themselves. Now, about 4 or 5 years ago, they probably had $73 million in pocket change. Now, that's a big deal for them. But you know what? What I say to that? You own a professional sports team. You're supposed to cough up that kind of money. Do you want nice arenas? Do you want better players to come to Sacramento? Then you got to cough up the money if you want to put a better product on. And then $59 million is going to be paid by a company called AEG. Now, I looked up AEG not too long ago, actually, after I heard about this. And they're a worldwide company. They've done this with multiple arenas. But I couldn't really come up with much else on them. They just kind of are there. It reminded me a lot of Prestige Worldwide from Step Brothers. They're in everything. But what do? They're an entertainment company? What does that mean? Nobody really knows, you know. AEG, very, very subtle and very nonchalantly kind of brings in this $59 million to help us. But what they're going to get something out of it, I guess. It just keeps reminding me of Prestige Worldwide, where they don't really do anything, but I feel like they're a big player in this. So we have to keep an eye out, actually, for AEG. Now, this is such a big news on King's Corner, and such big news for all Kings fans, because especially for people my age, we grew up on those good teams. We grew up on those Glory Days teams, and that's why we I say we, there's not a lot of us left, but the people that did stay loyal to the Kings, that's why we stayed loyal, because, you know, we grew up on those good teams. We know, oh, we can get it back. We did it once. We can do it before. We can get it back. But if they were leaving, we weren't able to get it back. So us staying is really a huge weight lifted off of our shoulders, because we want that good team back. We want to get back to the glory days, but we want it to happen in Sacramento. Now, on to another Kings news, another big Kings news, and this happened actually today. Isaiah Thomas, and we love Isaiah Thomas here on Sports City. Oh, yes, we do. Isaiah Thomas named Western Conference Rookie of the Month. Now, this hasn't happened since Tyreek, and before that, not a lot. Except it's a little, I feel like it's a little bit bigger of a deal than when it happened with Tyreek Evans, because Isaiah Thomas was the 60th pick in the draft. The last pick. 60 out of 60. Mr. Irrelevant. He's now leading a team that's won two straight. You know, for us Kings fans, that's a big deal. We've won two straight games. He's started the last five games. And in those starts, he's actually averaged 19 points with 7 assists in those starts. And the best part is a 59% field goal percentage. He's 5'9", and he's shooting 59% from field goal range. That's absolutely incredible. Obviously, it can't hold up. But for those five starts, he's really making a difference. You see other people that they get a chance to start, and then boom, all of their skills go down. The nerves kick in. It's more pressure that you get, more responsibility. Isaiah Thomas says, no, I want that responsibility. I want it now, and I want it even as a rookie, even as a 5'9" rookie. I want it, and he took it, and now he's leading this team. And when I say leading this team, I don't just mean as a point guard. I mean he's running the offense, and he is the leader. He's a vocal leader. He's a strong leader, and the Kings have been looking for someone like that for a very long time. Everybody thought, oh, you know, Francisco Garcia, he's the veteran. He can do it. He's been on the team since 05. You know, he's not very good. Unfortunately, we kind of figured out that he's not very good. And you can't really be a strong leader if you play 4 minutes a game. Isaiah Thomas, as a rookie now, is coming up and being a vocal and a playing leader. And that's huge for this young team. The Kings are the youngest team in the entire league. And one of their younger players is being a leader, which is something that we expected from Tyreek, something that we expected from DeMarcus. As those marquee players, it didn't come, but now Isaiah Thomas is coming in, and he's really, really stepping it up. And I would like to just congratulate him for Western Conference Rookie of the Month. Now, Kings have a game tonight, actually. And last week on Sports City, we talked about how they had a game that night against the Heat. Game didn't go... It went well, but, you know, we lost. It was the Heat. We stayed in the game for most of the game, but it's LeBron, it's Wade, it's Bosch, it's the Miami Heat. It's acceptable for us to lose a semi-close game to the Heat. Now, tonight, the Kings host the LA Clippers, who are first in our division, the Pacific Division. The Clippers, what an interesting team. Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, Caron Butler, now an injured Chauncey Billups. All these are names, guys. These are serious players that are leading this team, and they're becoming a championship contender, really. Now, I went to a game against the Clippers last year at Arco, and it actually turned out to be a sellout game because it was the game that the Maloofs were going to, and Sacramento wanted to show that we still cared about this team. All 17,317 seats were filled, and it was quite the exciting game. Kings came away with a win. It was a really great game. Excuse me. Now, it's a little different tonight because Chris Paul plays for the Clippers now. But you know what? I think Isaiah Thomas, with his momentum, I think Isaiah Thomas will do a decent job against Chris Paul. Maybe I am so far so biased and so blinded by Isaiah Thomas's recent well doings, I guess. But I think that he's quick enough and he is a smart enough basketball player with a high enough basketball IQ that he can hold Chris Paul to just an average game. And I think that our bigs, Chuck Hayes and DeMarcus Cousins, are going to do pretty well against Blake Griffin. It's that middle of the... that those wings is what gets me. Every time you see the small forwards just light up the Kings. Every time our small forwards are just killing us every single game. And the Clippers, they have Caron Butler, but other than that, it's not a lot. I mean, they have Randy Foy, but he's too small. The Clippers also have a weakness at small forward. So I think since the Kings match up a little bit well with the Clippers, they actually have a shot, especially since the Kings in their last 10 home games are 7-3 at home. That's really good. That's actually playoff level. On the road, it's a little different story, but at home, the Kings are playing really, really well, and I think that they have a legitimate chance in this game tonight. Now, that's going to be all for Kings Corner, and up next, we're going to have a little bit of Giants talk. Stay tuned on Sports City with Jay Smith. You're listening to radio.dominican.edu, and I would like to let everybody know that it is Thursday, and it is 3 to 4 p.m. right now. That's when Sports City is playing. It's usually... that was due to an unfortunate rescheduling, but it'll usually be at the normal time, Tuesday, 5 to 6. This is radio.dominican.edu.
So high.
And welcome back to Sports City with Jay Smith. You're listening to radio.dominican.edu. And we've come to my favorite part of this particular show, spring training. Spring training is among us, baseball fans, and more specifically, Giants fans. Because I explained this to a friend earlier. My love for the Kings is almost rivaled by my love for the NBA. But my love for the Giants is not even close to my love for the MLB. My Giants fandom is so far above my caring for any other baseball team in the league. But I really do care about the other NBA teams. So when I talk about baseball, it's first, second, and last. And all of the options are Giants talk. Now let's get into it. Today was the first, not official, but the first game of spring training, which is a great day for all. It was an intra-squad game, and it featured almost exclusively prospects, which, man, I just love talking Giants prospects. I love it. According to most websites, the Giants are around 24th, 25th best in prospects, which is kind of sad to see. Luckily, that's mostly because we graduated a few, like Brandon Belt, Buster Posey, Pablo Sandoval, Madison Bumgarner. All those guys had just graduated from being a prospect, and they're all still 24 or younger. So, and they're all really, really good, luckily. So we're not quite as bad as the rankings make us seem, but we still could use a little bit more. Although, I would like to talk about a few things I saw today in the intra-squad game. I posted on Facebook the link to get to the intra-squad game, and I'd like to actually give a shout-out to one of my favorite websites ever, McCovey Chronicles. Go to McCoveyChronicles.com, and you will automatically become the most informed Giants fan out there. There are just dozens and dozens of people that comment on all of the stories posted by this one blog. It's a blog by this one blogger, and then there are just hundreds and hundreds of comments on every single story. And there's usually about two or three stories a day, and hundreds of comments on every single story filled with just amazing baseball knowledge and amazing Giants knowledge, really. Along with some other funny stuff. So I would really recommend McCovey Chronicles to all. And really, any other Giants blog. They're all good. There are so many out there, and they're all really good. But today, I get off track. Today, I saw some of the intra-squad game, and I saw the Giants' best prospect right now, Gary Brown, up to bat. Now, Gary Brown is far and away the Giants' best prospect. He's supposed to be a five-star prospect out of five. Nobody else is even a four. Everybody else is a three or below. Excuse me. Now, Gary Brown is fast. And when I say Gary Brown is fast, I don't mean Gary Brown is pretty fast. I mean Gary Brown is a track star. The dude can run the lights out. It's amazing to watch him run. And one of the best things I saw today during the intra-squad scrimmage was that Gary Brown hit a ball. It kind of looked like a pop-up. It was going the opposite. He's a righty, and it went the opposite way, went towards the gap in right center, and all of a sudden, it's a ground rule double. The ball went 300 feet out there, and it just looked like a pop-up. That's pure power. That's unlimited power by a guy who's really, you don't see as a power guy. But then he runs to the double. It seemed like he was already at second base by the time that the ball got over the fence. It was just amazing to watch him run. I can't stress enough how unbelievably fast he is. On scales that scouts accumulate, they rate every type of
projection for a player, every type of skill for a player, and speed is one of them, and you rate every single one from 20 to 80. Don't ask me why it's 20 to 80, not 1 to 100 or 1 to 10 or something, but it's 20 to 80. Gary Brown is an 80, and it's not even close. He's a straight 80, and the dude just runs. I can't stress enough how unbelievably fast he is. Another thing, a little semi-prospect related, we're getting on to Brandon Belt now. Brandon Belt comes on during the scrimmage, first at bat, first pitch, hits a double to left field. Just right away. It's amazing that this guy didn't play every at bat last year. He's so good. I don't get what Bochy and Sabian were thinking last year. First pitch, he hits a double to left field, and it looked like he was just nonchalantly hitting it. He was just going through the motions, and all of a sudden, the ball was at the fence, and he had an RBI. That's what everybody in the baseball world likes to call power. The guy has serious power, and I dream of a world where the 1-4 hitters for the Giants will be Gary Brown, Brandon Belt, and Panda and Buster Posey. Now we have a call here on Sports City. Who's here? Hello? My apologies, caller. This is Sports City. Who is it?
Jordan, it's Brian Sanchez. What's up, bud?
What's up, Brian? How are you?
Good. I heard you talking about one of my favorite players, and that's Gary Brown.
Gary Brown. Gotta love him.
Yeah. Now, I'm down from the San Jose area, so I went to a lot of San Jose Giants games where Gary Brown played his minor league this year.
Yeah.
You have no idea what's coming, man. This guy, swear to God, he hit a ground ball up the middle, just rolled it out in the center field. He didn't even stop at first. He went all the way to second. Center fielder threw in, and he still got in there. That's how fast this kid is. I've seen him lead off games with home runs. This kid's going to be special, and I think he's going to be up there this year.
Now, Brian, you can't see me in the studio right now, but I have the biggest smile on my face. I really just can't wait for this kid to get to the big leagues and hit leadoff for the Giants.
No, he really is special. I watched him. He went to Cal State Fullerton, and I followed him throughout his career there, and I jumped through the roof when I saw the Giants draft him on draft day, and I got to see him. I went to about 30 San Jose Giants games last year because I love San Jose Giants. It's where the top prospects are.
Yeah, and it really is.
This guy blew me away. He was the most special prospect I've seen since Buster Posey down there.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. I've seen videos on Gary Brown. Unfortunately, I live a little bit far away from San Jose. I can't make it to too many San Jose Giants games. But every video I've seen, every stat I've seen, says that Gary Brown is going to be one of the best leadoff hitters in the game. And he has actually a hidden amount of power. People say, oh, you know, he'll just be a singles hitter. But he hits doubles. He hits triples. Especially in AT&T Park, if he can hit it the other way into that right center gap, he might have a chance for 2 inside the park home runs a year.
Oh, you hit the nail on the head there. I've seen this guy take a first pitch curveball to open the entire game up out to left center field about 360 feet. And this was with wood bats in San Jose. He's got such a short, compact swing that the ball just jumps off of his bat. And that's the reason the Giants made the trades they did with Melky Cabrera and Angel Pagan, because they're both one-year guys.
Exactly.
So they're just holding the spot for Brown. This kid's going to be special. And the Giants system may be rated low, but their top prospect is in America's top 15.
Yeah.
So they're going to be good to go.
Yeah, and I completely agree. Gary Brown is one of the most exciting players in the minor leagues, and I really just can't wait till he gets to the big leagues and leads the Giants to some more glory, really.
Absolutely. All right, Jordan, thanks for having me. Doing great job. Keep it up.
Thank you, Brian. See you later. And that was Brian Sanchez, host of the Sports Report, actually. Him and Case Donahue, they will be on, actually, after my show every week, Tuesday from 6 to 8. You don't want to miss their show. And I will even be a guest on that on the Sports Report often. And you're really not going to want to miss the Sports Report. It's a really great show. Now, a little bit more Giants news from the intra-squad game today. During the videos and during the warm-ups before the game, they were showing players, they were showing batting practice. I saw Hector Sanchez, one of the Giants' kind of hidden prospects. Really only Giants fans know about him. He was just raking it at batting practice. You see these guys, they get to like the middle of the outfield. Hector Sanchez hitting it to the wall every single time, it seemed like. Just putting on a show. However, we have another burly type of guy that we have to talk about here, and that's the lovable Pablo Sandoval, good old Kung Fu Panda. And Kung Fu Panda, he's had a little problem with his weight. As everybody knows, in 2010, he did not have a good year due to his weight problems, due to off-field problems, just not a good year. During the 2010-2011 offseason, he worked at it. He lost about 35, 40 pounds, gained muscle, and in 2011, he was one of the best third basemen in the game. But it's a whole lot of speculation. Is he going to come back in shape? Is he going to let himself go like he did a little bit during the course of the season? Is he going to completely tone his body to be a serious baseball player that he can be? And I saw him, and I saw him running. They were doing some base running drills. I think he looks really, really good. I am very, very optimistic about Panda this year. It may be my bias, but I personally think Pablo Sandoval is one of the top three third basemen. And really, he could even be one of the top 10 players in the National League this year if he keeps up his hitting from last year and he keeps up his really stellar defense. You see this guy, this big guy, run in at the hot corner. He chases after bunts. He dives to his right. Had to face myself a little bit. See which direction it was. He dives to his right to take away that down-the-line double. And then he's got a cannon. Pablo Sandoval is such an underrated defender, and if he keeps losing weight, he really is a Gold Glove third baseman. And I think that he did lose the weight this year, and that's what it looked like. And I'm very, very optimistic for Pablo Sandoval this year. And one... couple more things for the Giants. I'm here at Sports City. I'm going to start a little tradition. Each week, before the season actually starts, I'm going to give my predictions for one, two, maybe three players, and this is before the season starts. First off, I'd like to start with a little bit more optimism, and that's Madison Bumgarner. Now, I think Madison Bumgarner this year could be, and I think he will be, just as good as Matt Cain and Tim Lincecum. He could be even better. All of the stats on this guy are absolutely unbelievable. It's amazing what he did last year. And last year, the best part is that he was 21 turning 22 during last year. At a prospect age, he's still at almost mid-level prospect age, and he just strikes out hitters in the big leagues like no other. Last year, he had a 4-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio, which is unbelievable for even the best pitchers. People just don't do that, especially at 21, and he's still growing. It's amazing what he can do this year. Now, we'll have to take a little step back for this next prediction as we get down to one of the most lovable Giants of all time, B-Weezy, Brian Wilson. Unfortunately, I have a little bit of pessimism towards Brian Wilson this year. I actually think that he will have a little bit of regression. In 2009, 2010, one of the best closers in the league. Just unparalleled. He had fire. He got the job done. However, it was torturous, but he got the job done. Last year, he got injured. He blew a few saves. It just wasn't working out. And this year, I really don't think it's going to go too much better. I think that the Giants are going to have to go in-house and bring Heath Hembree, another another prospect and another prospect that could really make a difference in the future as a closer. I think they're going to have to bring him in a little early, a little earlier than the Giants organization wants, because I really think that Brian Wilson is either going to get injured, or I think that he's going to hide his injury because he's so proud and we all love it, but he's so cocky, he never wants to leave the game. And because of that reason, I think that Brian Wilson will not have his best year. Now, that is all for a little bit of Giants news. And next, we have The Vent. And you are listening to Sports City with Jay Smith here on radio.dominican.edu.
I descended a dusty gravel ridge beneath the Bixby Canyon Bridge until I eventually arrived at the place where your soul had died, and barefoot in the shallow creek I grabbed some stones from underneath and waited for to speak to me. In the silence, it became so very clear that you had long ago disappeared. I cursed myself for being surprised that this didn't play like it did in my mind, all the way from San Francisco, as I chased the end of your road, 'cause I've still got miles to go. We'll be right back.
welcome back to Sport City with Jay Smith. You're listening to radio.dominican.edu. Before I continue with the show, I'd like to give a little bit of some shout-outs, actually, to my buddies back home, especially Hunter, Tony, and Blake. Thanks for all the sports knowledge over the years and all the help that you guys have given me for my show. I really do appreciate it. Now, on to other things, and especially around the NBA. Now, around the NBA has one specific topic today, and that is Kobe Bryant. Now, Kobe Bryant is one of my least favorite players in the NBA. I think he's one of the greatest ever. Obviously, he's not the greatest ever. That's a whole nother show, though. But obviously, you have to respect Kobe Bryant for what he's done in the league. 5 championships, an MVP, All-Star Game MVPs, Finals MVP. He really has done a whole lot. But I read an article the other day, and I actually have read an article articles similar to this that have confirmed what I just read the other day. Now, Kobe Bryant has always supposed to been the clutch shooter in the NBA. Basically, since the early 2000s, him, when he was with Shaq, he was the clutch shooter. You always said, give the ball to number 8. Now, give the ball to number 24, and he will make it. And he just tears your heart out. I personally went to a Kobe Bryant buzzer beater. It wasn't exactly a buzzer beater, but he tied the game up against the Kings with 4.5 seconds left to just rip our hearts out. And it was just so devastating to watch. It was, especially since the Kings hate the Lakers so much, and it really just didn't feel good. However, apparently, that doesn't happen too often. I have a few stats here for you listeners, which relate to Kobe, and which really, they really just warm my heart, actually. Now, when the Lakers are tied or trailing by 1 or 2 points, Kobe shoots 31%, and that's that's 24 seconds or below that they are tied or trailing by 1 or 2 points. He shoots 31% from the field. And with people since 1997, with players with 30 or more attempts, that's about league average. Now, Kobe, you're thinking, no, he can't be league average for clutch shooting. He has to be above everybody. No, he's about league average. And my favorite part of this stat is that he's behind guys like Karl Malone, one of the biggest so-called chokes in NBA history. Well, Kobe Bryant is behind him in this stat, which seems like a pretty legitimate stat for clutch shooters. And you know who else is in front of Kobe? Chris Webber. Chris Webber, especially as a Kings fan, I know, was so unclutch. He made maybe 1-2 clutch shots that I can remember. Like serious, serious clutch shots. But Kobe's behind him. How does that happen? Why doesn't everybody see Kobe as a non-clutch guy like Webber and Malone? Another thing that has to do with Kobe is that he does this all while Phil Jackson, his coach for almost his entire career, despises it. Kobe, I've always thought of Kobe as a ball hog, and so has the rest of Kobe haters, but it seems like this is completely true. Over the last 5 years, Kobe has had 56 clutch shots, more than anybody else in the league. And he's attempted those 56 shots. He hasn't made those 50 shots. Those are just attempts. Now, that's over 50 attempts with 1 assist over the last 5 years in that under 24 seconds with down by 1 or 2 or tied. 1 assist over the last 5 years. That's, what, 360 games plus playoffs? Kobe has played in most of those games. He's been a pretty durable person. And he has taken those 56 shots. I just can't get over that it's been 1 assist over 5 years. How does that not scream ball hog? I have Laker fans friends, you know. I don't discriminate. I maybe think less of them, but They're still my friends. And I tell them this, and they say, no, 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 just watch him, just watch him. Oh, I do watch him, and he does do amazing. But then you look at the stats, and you say, oh, they could probably win more games if he just wasn't a ball hog. And they could. This Laker team could be even better than they are. Over the past, what has it been, 16 years since he's been playing, the Lakers won 5 championships. They could have maybe even won more if Bryant was more unselfish. And Phil Jackson, like I said, hates it. Phil Jackson and longtime assistant Kurt Rambis have gone on record as saying that they want to run their highly efficient triangle offense during crunch time. But Kobe refuses and wants the ball in his hands. Now, that doesn't make sense to me. If the triangle offense scores 109 points per 100 possessions over the last 16 years since Kobe's rookie season, that's so far above everybody else, except maybe the Chris Paul Hornets. It's so far above everyone in regular time, in non-crunch time. But then in crunch time, with those 24 seconds left, it goes down to 80 points per 100 possessions, which is league average. Now, how does the highest efficiency team in the league go all the way down to average during crunch time? The answer really is, apparently, Kobe's a huge ball hog. And I love saying Kobe's a huge ball hog when I have stats to back it up. Especially since every Kobe lover is always about, oh, just watch him during crunch time. You can just see it. Well, you know what? I do see it. But then I look at the stats. And the stats don't see it. And the stats are what actually happened. It's not like stats are just come out of nowhere. They get the stats from things that actually happened. And one of the best parts is that when Bryant is on the floor during crunch time, during the last 2 minutes of the game, his Lakers, over the past 16 years, have actually been outscored by their opponents in those last 2 minutes. Now, for a team that outscores every opponent for the past 16 years, I mean, the Lakers have built a dynasty, really, above Kobe Bryant, and they had Shaq, and now they have Gasol and Bynum, and all that stuff. They've been so efficient and so much better than most of the league for that time, but then it completely washes away during crunch time, especially when Bryant is on the floor. When Bryant's off the floor, the Lakers actually get better statistically in crunch time. Don't ask me how it works, but that's just what the stats say. And, you know, I just love to hear those stats completely back everything I've always set up, that Kobe is a ball hog, and that Kobe just, he's not what people think he is in crunch time. And one specific reference, I have to build it back to the Kings, of course, it's Jay Smith here. Of course it has to do with the Kings. Game 5 of the 2002 Western Conference Finals, a game after Robert Horry hit one of the most clutch shots in NBA history, Kobe Bryant had the ball with 6 seconds left and down by one after Bibby made his shot. Kobe Bryant took on Bobby Jackson, got the ball stripped, got it back. Chris Webber completely and so stupidly, left Robert Horry to double-team Kobe. And what did Kobe do? Kobe had time to pass to Robert Horry, one of the maybe the best clutch shooter in NBA history, but he didn't. He took a very, very contested 23-foot three-pointer, bricked it, and the Kings won the game. There were 3 seconds left when he took that shot. He could have easily passed to an absolutely wide-open Robert Horry and been fine, and Robert Horry basically would have 100% made that shot, and we would have never talked about those 2002 Western Conference Finals being rigged because he made that shot. Now, that all happened because Kobe Bryant was a ball hog. Kobe didn't even look at Horry. He had his eye on the basket the entire time. And it just goes back to that one assisting. Now we're going to take a quick break before we come back with even more sports. I know it's unbelievable, but there's always sports to come around. And we will be back here on radio.dominican.edu. I am Jay Smith, and this is Sports City.
Welcome back to Sports City with Jay Smith. We're here near the end of the hour show on radio.dominican.edu. And we got a little something left for the end of the show. We saved a little reserves for the end of the show. And those reserves are in the form of the Boston Celtics. We're keeping it basketball here. And I think it's time for a little bit of venting. Now, the Boston Celtics, one of the premier franchises in all of sports, really, they are having a little trouble at the time, mostly with their star point guard, Rajon Rondo, and their longtime coach, Doc Rivers. My opinion in this whole debacle that is going on with the Boston Celtics is that they're both at fault, and it's absolutely ridiculous to watch them both go back and forth on what they could do or what they couldn't do. Rajon Rondo is just being a little kid about it. He's not coming to play. Sometimes he's mailing games in.
He is not putting in a full effort on all of the games, and it shows. It's very obvious, especially since he's a point guard. It's very obvious when he just kind of dribbles Tyreke Evans style at the top of the key for 12 seconds at a time, just looking around, pounding the ball on the court, not really knowing what to do. But then you see other games where he will drive, he'll make that awesome behind-the-back move. He does everything right that you want a point guard to do. He's got such great court vision. And I've always been on the Rondo bandwagon. Since 2008, when he was the point guard for the championship Celtics team, I thought, man, this kid is going somewhere. A lot of my friends thought, no, he can't shoot. It's just because he has star teammates. But I said, you know what? I really do think Rondo is a talented person. And I still think that he's incredibly talented, but his attitude is just getting in the way. And what I say, get over it. My God, just, you're playing for the Boston Celtics. You're playing with Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, these Hall of Famers. Get over it. Just play the game of basketball at your best ability. You have other people that just dream of playing in the NBA. Absolutely dream of it. Have no chance. And then you have people like Rondo just kind of going through the motions and not playing to their full ability. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's unacceptable, really. And I think Doc Rivers is at fault a little bit, too. I think that Doc Rivers and Danny Ainge, them two together, could have handled this situation so much better. Just infinitely better, really. Doc Rivers and Danny Ainge have made trading Rondo and putting Rondo on the trade block a complete, almost a priority for public view. Everybody knows that Rondo is going to get traded or might get traded. Why does that have to happen? Just keep it under wraps. It's the same with Paul Westphal and DeMarcus Cousins at the beginning of the season. Just keep it in the little inner circle. Don't let it get out to the media. Don't tell the whole world that you don't like each other. We don't need to know that. Then we start wondering if it affects your play. And it does. But we don't have to know that. And it's almost sad to see these organizations fall apart in just a stupid, dumb way that they are. The Celtics have... they're old, but they have a very, very talented point guard. And now he's just going to waste. He could have been a Celtic for life. But because of Doc Rivers, Danny Ainge, and Rajon Rondo, it's not going to work out. I mean, I'm not a Celtic fan, but if I got to play for the Celtics for my whole life, Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Paul Pierce, Bill Russell, the list goes on and on and on. To be in company with those names, to be in that all-star Hall of Fame company, is an absolute privilege. And they're just taking advantage of it and throwing it in the garbage. And it's absolutely unacceptable to watch. Whew! Now that I'm all riled up, we got to finish the show. This has been Sports City with Jay Smith here on radio.dominican.edu. I'd like to thank Brian Sanchez for calling in, actually. And you can listen to his show, Sports Report, from 6 to 8 on Tuesdays. And you can listen to my show, usually, on Tuesdays from 5 to 6, right before that show. And send everybody out with some good music. Obviously, it is Jay Smith. I do like to think that I listen to good music. And I'd like to thank everybody for listening. This has been Sports City on radio.dominican.edu.